nursing education, faculty shortages, happy hospitals, and happy patients. The nurse-midwife debate heats up again. Plus, we'll take a look at tetracyclines in another antibiotic review. If that's what you're looking for, you found it. It's The Nursing Show. Well, good day and welcome to this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the pod medic, and I'd like to welcome everybody to the show this week. If you haven't already done so, or if you're a brand new listener to The Nursing Show, you'll want to make sure you head over and check out The Nursing Show website. There's a lot of great information over there, including links to everything we discuss in each and every episode. A great way for you to follow up on the admittedly very basic information we're able to present here. And so we provide links to in-depth articles, to additional resources, all in the show notes for each episode. And you'll find that all at nursingshow.com. You can read the articles, you can leave comments over there on any of the entries, and there's a lot of other information posted up throughout the course of each week. So you're going to want to make sure that you put The Nursing Show on your list of sites to check in on regularly. You can also sign up for the Nursing Show newsletter there. And if you want to get in touch with me by email, you can always send in your comments, suggestions, questions, or corrections. If you find something we've said wrong, definitely get us corrected so we can get the right information out. But you can do all that by sending in your questions by email to comments@nursingshow.com. And comment by email, a lot of you did. Recently, I've gotten in a bunch of emails from nursing students telling me how much they enjoy the show, how much they think it's helpful to listen to the nursing show and review information as a nurse or get information study guide information, really, for nursing students. And that's one of the reasons I put the show together. So it's nice to hear that I'm accomplishing some of those goals. And particularly, it's always nice to hear from people in other countries. We have a lot of international listeners to the show, and I got a great email in from listener Chris, who's a student nurse in the Philippines, and wanted to thank me very much for the weekly podcast. So Chris, I hear you say you listen to the podcast during a 3-hour bus ride every weekend, and it makes that travel time productive. And, you know, that's one of the goals here, is to make sure that we have information for nurses, by nurses, to help you stay current on your knowledge or to help you study if you're still in school. I'll jump on in and kick off the news, and I'll start with a story that, while it happened in my own backyard here in Maryland, it is really something of national significance. This is the second annual Nursing Education Capacity Summit that occurred in Baltimore this past week, and it was attended by nursing representatives from 47 different states and the District of Columbia. And it was really looking at trying to address problems in the nursing shortage. The University of Maryland Baltimore School of Nursing Dean Dr. Janet Allen brought up the issue as she addressed the organization and talked about the fact that while they are not short of qualified nursing students, they are turning away potentially qualified nursing students because they don't have the faculty. In fact, in the state of Maryland, they are denying enrollment to more than 1,800 candidates because of a lack of faculty members just in 2008. And when you look nationwide, those numbers are more like 99,000 qualified candidates for nursing jobs or nursing school turned away because of insufficient faculty members. So what do we do? What do we work towards? Well, one of the issues that she focused on in this organization and group focused on were some of the problems with attracting nurses to the faculty positions. There are a lot of well-trained nurses out there, nurses with master's degrees, nurses who might be interested in getting master's degrees in nursing education. But unfortunately, the salary for a nurse who is looking in that direction is not up to par with what they could get working in a facility situation. A new master's or doctorate nurse can make anywhere between $80,000 and $200,000 in practice in the hospital setting, but if they wanted to be a faculty member, they are limited to, in the state of Maryland, Alan points out, and 50% of that in many cases, only about $65,000. Where does this even out when you're dealing with trying to have professionally trained faculty members when you can't afford to pay them what they can get in the private sector? So these are one of the challenges. Also, just the issues of the fact that there's an aging professorate that are retiring. All of these things are really holding back our ability to deal with our shortage in the nursing profession. And when we have so many potential nursing students waiting for their opportunities to get into nursing school, this is a serious issue. There are some ways we can expand access to educational resources through technology, simulations, distance education, but you still really need to have eyes on the student at some times of their educational process, in the clinical setting, in workshops, and some types of laboratory settings where they're learning skills. All of these need to be overseen by enough nurses to help them learn the job correctly. They shouldn't be having to get to the facilities and having to learn some basic procedures. They need to have these things in place. So look at this article and think about your community. And if you're a nurse with some experience, perhaps it's time for you to think about looking at an opportunity in nursing education, even on a part-time basis, and help give back to the nursing profession. Moving right along, I found a great article over at medicalnewstoday.com talking about happy hospitals make happy patients. It's a pretty straightforward headline, and it probably is a little oversimplified, but you know, think about it. When the morale of the employees in a hospital or any workplace are high, that comes back on to the customer base, and that includes the patients, right? In our facilities, our patients are our customers. So when we can be up to date and happy and you know, enjoying our jobs, that trickles down. Our patients get a sense of that. This is the topic of a study by let's see if I can find his name here. The John Griffiths is the professor of University of Michigan School of Public Health, and he examined 34 community hospitals. These aren't big facilities, community hospitals in 9 states that had earned a quality assurance award, a Malcolm Bridge National Quality Award, which has benchmarks that are recognized by various industries. So he wanted to look and see what made these hospitals the people that earned these national quality awards. And what he found was that there was a top-down shift in thinking, outside of the box kind of thinking, from the upper management levels all the way down to the employees at the lowest levels. And this started with things like CEOs of hospitals being very interactive with the patient population in many ways. For instance, a Florida hospital where patients are admitted and receive a welcome letter from the CEO that has his home phone number on it. The nurse managers visiting every single patient throughout the course of the day and making sure those patients have access to their personal cell phone numbers or office phone numbers to be able to reach them if there's any problem. Again, this makes the patients feel like they have a place to go if there's a problem that their nurses or other patient care people aren't meeting, and it makes the patient feel better. Now, this doesn't come cheaply. According to the article, hospitals keep costs low, but they also make sure they pay their employees in these facilities very well. One of the things that keeps a grin on your face is if your paycheck's bigger than it might ordinarily be. So if you're involved in the management process in your facility, or you are part of a committee looking at employee retention, you might want to print out and bring this article with you. You can go over and get the link at the Nursing Show website. It certainly is something to think about, because as we have nursing shortages, one way to try to hold that off is to keep the nurses you have. And this is one way to do it, by having happier employees across the board. Finally, I will wrap up with a brief look at a story that I think we've talked about before, but it popped up in the news again as states and other organizations look for ways to cut back on costs. They examine the way that healthcare is provided for some routine situations and procedures, for instance, pregnancy and delivery. How does home birth versus facility birth prop up on your radar? This is something we talked about in the past, but some states and regions limit the ability or the access for a patient to have their babies outside of the hospital and be attended by licensed certified nurse midwives or licensed certified professional midwives that maybe aren't nurses but have training in home birth. For a patient who doesn't have a high-risk pregnancy, for a patient who has done all kinds of prenatal care as directed, do they really have to attend a hospital and pay an additional thousands of dollars for a facility that they don't really need at the time? This is a big debate. You know, the medical community wants to have those people in the hospital where they can provide billing resources. And I know it's not all about the money. There are horror stories and dangers associated with not being in a hospital, but we also have to look at having trained people there to provide the things that are needed in an emergency situation and get that patient to a hospital if necessary. That's part of why you have people that are licensed and trained. They can recognize signs and symptoms of problems and make the decision that the patient needs to be moved. So this is a big debate, and I really want to hear back from you about it. So head over to the website, leave a comment at the bottom of the post for the show notes for this episode, or shoot me an email to comments@nursingshow.com. I really want to know what you think about nursing and midwives and how this relates to your particular area. For our tip of the week this week, I thought we would take a look at tetracyclines as we continue our series on antibiotics. And this is one of those things that old nurses that have been around a while, I don't want to call you old nurses, but nurses that have been around a while could use the review, and new and student nurses definitely need to make sure they're aware of some of the situations involved with these medications and educating our patients appropriately. Tetracyclines are known under the names tetracycline, doxycycline, demoxycycline, and other medications. Also, by the trade names, the one I'm most familiar with is vibromycin. But these medications are bacteriostatic, so they're not bactericidal. These are going to not kill existing bacteria, but they will limit reproduction and growth of the existing bacterial infections in the body. They are broad-spectrum antibiotics. They are effective against both gram-positive and gram-negative bacteria and are often used in first-line defense against medication infections by rickettsial bacteria, such as a Rocky Mountain spotted fever, also used frequently in pneumonia, typhus, also different ulcers, and some venereal diseases. It's also a common second-line medication for patients that have penicillin allergies in infections that might be ordinarily treated by penicillins. Some common contraindications and precautions you need to be aware about. First of all, children under the age of 8, pregnant women, lactating women, and anyone that has got problems with calcium deficiencies may not be a person that needs to take this medication or needs to be carefully and closely monitored. And that's because tetracyclines have an affinity for calcium and may limit the absorption of the body to get their own calcium. So you need to really be careful when administering this medication concurrently. Also, contraindicated, like many medications, for patients with renal or hepatic dysfunction. And that's because it just tends to cause more problems and has a higher incidence of renal toxicity. Patients who are taking ocular ointment versions of tetracyclines but are prone to opportunistic infections may not be a good candidate for this med because it'll limit the normal flora of the eye, and that can cause opportunistic infections to take over. So again, use caution with these patients. Because of the affinity for calcium by many of the tetracycline medications, taking this medication with anything that has calcium, such as a dairy product, or perhaps concurrently with someone who's taking over-the-counter antacid remedies, is going to have a decreased effectiveness because these things contain a lot of calcium in many cases. And so that tetracycline is going to bind with the calcium and be less likely to be absorbed into the body. Also, there are some other medication cross-interferences, so use your resources to cross-reference this with other medications taken by the patients. There's quite a list, so you know you really want to make sure you're checking drug compatibilities when you're administering this med. One particular one I'll bring up is the fact that when a patient is taking a digitalis medication, there is an increased risk for DIG toxicity with these patients who are taking tetracycline. So again, that's going to monitor their DIG levels is going to be very important, and educating the patient about things to watch for with adverse effects from the DIG toxicity in addition to tetracycline. Common side effects are, you know, the normal nausea, abdominal issues, diarrhea, cramping associated with the destruction of normal GI flora, and some patients are more susceptible to this than others. But again, make sure patients are taking plenty of fluids with this med, and that'll offset both the dehydration from potential diarrhea as well as assist with good kidney function throughout the course of the med. Other problems are photosensitivity. This causes an increased sensitivity of the body and the skin to sunlight. So patients are going to need to be protected from direct sunlight when on the medication. Also, this med, like so many antibiotics, decreases the effectiveness of oral contraceptives. So make sure you have that talk with your patients. You know, I have good friends of ours who thought they were done having kids, and unfortunately, the person who prescribed them a strong antibiotic didn't inform them to stop taking the pill, and you know, 9 months later, they had a lovely daughter. She's a cute kid, but I think they were hoping to be closer to having them all out of the house by now. So it's important to remember that, and with any antibiotic, to make sure that patients who are taking oral contraceptives use other methods, barrier devices, and things like that while they're on these meds until they've had that full course of their contraceptives again to get back on track. I've talked about some specific nursing considerations already, but I want to go over a few others here. This med should be taken on an empty stomach. The acidity of an empty stomach and the changes there will help with increased absorption of the medication. Of course, meds like this and any other antibiotic should be taken for the full course of treatment unless an adverse effect stops it. They need to take all of the antibiotics and not just stop when they feel better. This, of course, increases the advantageous nature for this for superbugs, resistant bacteria strains that might be able to fight back and get even stronger if the full course is not taken. So these patients need to really be aware of this. Any antacid medications should be taken away from the tetracycline doses. I've seen varying numbers here. 2 to 3 hours seems to be the ballpark. So refer to your own facility guidelines or your own drug guide for that. Again, maintain adequate hydration. Patients should be drinking plenty of fluids when taking this drug. Also, monitor your patients carefully if they're getting IV doses. Now, I know we know this, but again, monitor them for adverse drug reactions, and also monitor them carefully for venous irritation at the IV site. Some labs you want to check and monitor, CBCs, urinalysis, and all of your liver and kidney function tests. And this includes your BUN, creatinine, bilirubin levels, alkaline phosphatase, ALT and AST, all really important to keep track of, as well as your hemoglobin and platelet levels. So this is important. Urine glucose levels may come back falsely positive or falsely negative because of alterations in the chemistry of the urine. So this may be something that's thrown out of whack, and you should use alternative methods to monitor blood sugar. One of the problems with this medication is that it can offer opportunities for superinfections, bacteria that are resistant. Because it's not bactericidal, it's just bacteriostatic, the bacteria can still be living and can develop resistance and move forward. So you really need to monitor in the hospital if the patient is seeing signs of improvement or not. If they're not, there may be an indication to move on to a different broad-spectrum antibiotic, or with laboratory assistance, a directed focused antibiotic administration other than the tetracycline. So that's important. Also, you want to make sure that you inform and instruct your patients of all the educational things we've talked about. Again, pregnancy, patients who think they might be pregnant, it's going to be contraindicated, not might, but going to be contraindicated for them to take this drug. And so if they think they might be pregnant or there's a chance they might be pregnant, it may be indicated to move in a different direction. Also, again, protective clothing, sunscreen to protect themselves from UV light exposure and photosensitivity reactions from this drug. Again, that sunscreen should not contain PABA, P-A-B-A. It needs to be a non-PABA sunscreen because of reaction problems. Inform your patients carefully that they need to take this again on an empty stomach and not with milk, cheese, or any other product that might contain additional calcium. That'll reduce the overall effectiveness. Finally, and always with antibiotics and just about any med, make sure your patient's aware of signs of allergic reaction and to report and notify immediately their physician, or in cases of severe reaction, immediately call 911 and get emergency services involvement, because of course you don't fool around with allergic reactions. So that's a look at tetracyclines, and I urge you to check out the links on antibiotics in the show notes, and we'll be back with more in this series soon. And that's going to wrap up this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I want to remind everyone to follow up on the links in the show notes to get the full picture on information that's presented here. I can only present you general medical information for general educational purposes. You need to understand your limitations of practice, whether you're a student or a working nurse, and follow up on the resources here and make sure you understand how that fits into your area of practice and regional guidelines. In the meantime, I want to make sure you get back in touch with me. Go to nursingshow.com. You can leave comments on the episodes there. You can also contact me by email. Send in those questions, comments, or yeah, even corrections here to comments@nursingshow.com. Well, that's it for me. I'm going to wrap things up now with some great PodSafe music from the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. This is a song from an artist I may have played here before. I know I've played him over on the MedicCast podcast, but this is Cody Prevost with one of his songs that I think you'll really enjoy. Call me when you get there. So check it out. If you like what you hear, there's a link in the show notes for Cody's website. And also, if you like the music, a link to go over and purchase it at iTunes. So you can just click that button if you're interested in buying this song. It's a great tune. But let Cody know you heard it here on The Nursing Show. That's it. I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic. I want to remind all of you to remember to stay safe and stay tuned here to The Nursing Show. Take care.
Hey everybody, this is Cody Prevost. Thanks for listening to this podcast. Here's my brand new single.
Sometimes love lets you out before you're ready, leaves you standing all alone on the side of the road. You can look back and cry if you wanna, or be thankful for the places you never would have known. We stopped time like a day down on Captiva Island, felt bright as a breeze on a sweet Georgia night. We took a gamble like we Sin City, burned hot as a Memphis Blues bar in July. Now it cuts like a Calgary winter wind, thinking we'll never travel across the map again. But if you find regret somewhere, call me when you get there. I pray someday you will discover this world needs a lot more lovers like us. I heard you loud and clear when you said it's over, but that don't mean I'll ever give up. 'Cause we dance like the stars in the sky over Texas, climb high as a mountain out in Colorado, turn heads like a trend out of Southern California, made more memories than a spring break in Mexico. Now it cuts like a Calgary winter wind, thinking we'll never travel across a map again. But if you find regret somewhere, call me when you get there. We went a thousand places with no direction, ran out of gas just before perfection. And we danced like the stars in the sky over Texas, climbed high as a mountain out in Colorado, turned heads like a trend out of Southern California, made more memories than a spring break in Mexico. Now we cuss like a Calgary winter wind, thinking we'll never travel across a map again. But if you find regret somewhere, call me when you get there. Call me when you get there.